All right, guys, welcome back to the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. This is one of your hosts, Brandon DeCruz, and I'm going to be hosting a solo podcast today for episode 88, which is going to go over the downsides of chronic underfueling and frequent dieting cycles. So on this week's episode of the podcast, I wanted to cover something that was quite timely for this time of year. And so really, when it comes down to it, a lot of people are going to be planning their New Year's resolutions. And so with the new year coming right around the corner, this is the time in the year where many are looking to start a diet to improve their body composition. And for most, the goal is to enter a dieting phase to drop some unwanted body fat. And although this may be a good goal for those who are carrying excess, body fat, or those who have been eating at maintenance calories or above for a prolonged period of time, there are some populations and certain individuals and clientele which going into a fat loss phase just isn't appropriate for. So that's really what we want to cover on today's podcast. And so there are many individuals out there who are constantly going on diets and have a history of chronic dieting. And so for those individuals, going into yet another dieting cycle as the new year begins isn't the best move, as they've already been underfueling themselves for a prolonged period of time and have downregulated their metabolism. They've decreased their hormone production, and also they've downregulated their energy expenditure levels, and they're just experiencing decrements in their biofeedback, and these physiological systems are not going to improve and come back online into normal values if they just continue to try to force their bodies to lose body fat by continuing to diet in a chronic and aggressive manner. So on this week's episode of the podcast, I want to dive into the drawbacks and downsides associated with consistent underfueling and chronic dieting. As for every new client I have that contacts me who needs to lose body fat and would benefit from doing so and from going into a fat loss phase and utilizing a diet to do so, I have another client who contacts me with a long history of dieting, but who also wants to continue trying to lose fat and to continue living in a deficit. But these individuals have such poor biofeedback that they're just not going to respond favorably to going right back into a deficit and trying to force the fat loss process. So for these individuals, they'd be better served by taking a period of time eating at maintenance or even above maintenance to upregulate their body and restore their metabolic resilience and restore their metabolism and hormones in order to set them up for a more effective fat loss progress and fat loss phase in the future. And although dieting for fat loss can have a ton of benefits in terms of improving our body composition, our metabolic health, and even our confidence, it's a tool which is only useful when used properly with the right person at the right time. But it needs to be applied to someone who's, in the right place in their fitness journey. And if we're to utilize a diet with someone that's not in the right place in their fitness journey, it can continue doing more harm than good, which is why I want to shed light on the downsides of chronic dieting and being in an underfueled state, as this is something far too many coaches neglect to touch on. So many individuals out there, and this could be even they're unaware of the negative effects of engaging in frequent dieting cycles and how, what impact that can have on their physiology and their body composition outcomes long term. So they think they can just continue to jump from diet to diet when in actuality, they should be taking a more periodized approach to fat loss, which includes phases where they aren't in the deficit. So on today's podcast, we're really going to cover some broad-based concepts and topics related to both underfueling and chronic dieting. So throughout the context or throughout the conversation that we have today, we're going to cover topics such as the prevalence of chronic dieting and underfueling, the negative effects of chronic underfueling, the difference between appropriate fueling, so fueling for the work required, and underfueling, which is what most people do. We're going to even discuss, the various impacts that underfueling has on different aspects of our body composition, our physiology, and just general health. And so that will include things like our metabolism, our thyroid hormone production, our body composition, and our ability to gain and maintain muscle mass, how it impacts training performance, and then also how it impacts things like sex hormone production, menstrual cycle function, and reproductive function. So to start things off, I really want to cover the prevalence of chronic dieting and underfueling, because I think if we really look into the research on this, it'll actually be quite shocking to a lot of people. And I don't believe that many out there realize just how prevalent and how common it is for people to engage in frequent dieting cycles. So if we look at the research statistics on how often individuals within the general population diet each and every year, we see that around 42% of males and up to 61% of females report going on a diet each and every year in an attempt to lose weight. So around half of adults are in a deficit at some point in the year. And this is statistics that look at year on and year out. So this is a chronic thing where they're doing it each and every single year. However, we see the diet recidivism rates being anywhere between 50 to 95%, meaning many are able to lose some weight in the short term, but they end up either back to where they were shortly afterwards, or in many cases, they end up losing weight in an unsustainable manner due to not having been in a good spot to do so at the start of their fat loss phase. So they started off in a position where they really weren't in a great physiological or psychological place to go into a diet, but they forced it anyway. And then they end up gaining even more weight and fat back than they lost in the fat loss phase itself, which results in a concept that we've spoken about many times on the podcast, which is the body fat overshooting effect, which is where many end up carrying more body fat and less lean mass after a diet than they had at the start of the diet, which is something we want to avoid at all costs. Think about it. You don't want to become a fatter, skinnier version of yourself, essentially. You want to maintain your metabolically active tissue and you want to get leaner. So you want to have a lean muscular physique. That's what the 99.9% of people who come to me and who listen to this podcast, that's their goal. And then, so if we look at the prevalence of being in a state of low energy availability, AKA in an underfueled state, we see some shocking statistics in terms of just how common this is. So, for example, in a 2020 narrative review done on female and male athletes, they found that the prevalence of being underfueled and in a state of low energy availability ranges from between 22% to 58% of athletes. So we're looking, roughly at 20 to 60% of athletes that engage in sports or in competitive endeavors are in a state of low energy availability. Then in a 2019 study, researchers looked at a group of 1,000 female athletes training at least 4 hours or more per week and found that over 47% of them were found to be in an increased risk of underfueling, disordered eating habits, and low energy availability. And although much of the initial research, as we just covered, found that female athletes were at the highest risk of low energy availability, more recent research finds that this is also quite prevalent and common in females who aren't competitive athletes. So this is not something that is just applicable or just being seen commonly in athletic individuals. It's even in the common in people in the general population. So for example, in a study from the International Journal of Sports Nutrition and Exercise Metabolism, researchers looked at 109 female recreational exercisers who were engaged in at least 150 minutes per week of moderate exercise and used a validated questionnaire to determine the risk of low energy availability, aka chronic underfueling. And so this cross-sectional study found that of this sample of gym goers, 45% of them were at a risk of underfueling. So what we're seeing is that for both athletes and non-athletes alike in our society today, there's a very high likelihood that they're underfueling themselves and in this state of low energy availability, either as a result of trying to improve their body composition for their sport or just in the pursuit of their own physique goals. But the issue with this type of approach to dieting is it can lead to what's referred to as relative energy deficiency syndrome, which is a condition of energy efficiency causing adverse effects on all bodily systems. And it affects both males and females who do not fuel themselves adequately and appropriately. And this can be done either intentionally or even unintentionally. So it could be just due to a lack of nutritional awareness, a lack of nutritional knowledge, things of that sort. And this is something I'm encountering more and more with new potential clients who come to me and who are trying to live on very low energy intakes. Yet they're having like more and more trouble losing fat with each consecutive diet they go on. And this is due to the fact that they've incurred a lot of diet-induced metabolic adaptations associated with the underfueling that they've been putting their body under, and it's a stress. Yet they haven't taken the time to fuel themselves properly and reverse these issues. So these adaptations are, sustained essentially. They're longer lasting because they've never gotten out of that state of low energy availability. So really what ends up happening is they're now in this state where the only option they have is to eat less and/or exercise more. But each time they do so, their biofeedback regresses more and they're getting a poor return on their investment. So they're seeing less results despite putting in a ton of effort. And that's a really frustrating situation to be in because a lot of these individuals feel like they're trying really hard to get the body composition that they're looking for and that they're aiming for, and they're just not seeing the results for the work that they're putting in. And I'm sure that many of you out there can relate to that. That's an extremely frustrating situation that can be very discouraging. And this is something that I encounter many people at the beginning of the year. They set this fat loss goal and, they may have just finished a diet right prior to the holiday season. So they go from doing months of dieting throughout the summer and the early fall, and then they go into this 6 week period of the holidays and they regain a ton of weight, not only because they've let go a lot of their habits and behaviors, but they've also kind of treated the holiday instead of individual events more so as a season of overeating or overindulging. And that has caught up to them. So they've gained a lot of the weight that they had lost initially back. And now they're trying to, quote unquote, rectify things or undo the damage. Many people utilize that terminology. And I really try to have people kind of reframe their mindset on that and realize that we could get back just to eating at maintenance and keeping yourself in a well-fueled state, but also be able to improve your body composition, go through things like body recomposition, which is the addition of lean muscle mass while decreasing fat mass without having to go into an aggressive deficit. And so another thing I want to cover is the negative effects of chronic underfueling. So there are many negative effects that are associated with chronic underfueling that many don't realize. And if they did, I think they'd be more strategic about when and how often they decided to diet. And so chronic dieting is a stressor to your body. And as with every stressor, we all respond to them differently based on the spot we are when we're starting a diet. So if you're someone who has been adequately fueling yourself, training in a progressive manner, and haven't dieted in quite some time, your body is essentially primed to be more responsive to entering a deficit and being able to effectively lose body fat. So you're in a really good position to start a fat loss phase. However, the issue is that most who want to diet aren't in the right position to do so because they still haven't recovered from their previous dieting cycles. So going into a deficit is only going to exacerbate the problems they're dealing with currently and the issues they've incurred from dieting so frequently over the years. And if you're someone who has a long history of dieting and you're already stressed, whether that be physically or mentally or emotionally, continuing to engage in chronic dieting cycles is only going to lead you to face even greater physiological problems and pushback from your body, which is going to make the process of losing body fat more and more difficult. It's going to be more challenging, both physically and mentally. And it's going to put you at an even greater amount of stress. And it's going to force you to essentially expose your body and mind to more stress in and of itself, just because you're really trying to force this adaptation essentially. And this is because our body and metabolism adapt to what we do and what we feed ourselves. And if you're constantly restricting your calorie intake and trying to eat less and less, your body is going to turn down its physiological systems, including your metabolism and your ability to burn calories as a result of this underfueling. As we have to realize that this is an evolutionary adaptive mechanism our body puts in place to try to, survive essentially excessive amounts of stress. And when you're in a bad, state to begin with, dieting is a stressor on the body. It's caloric restriction, it's energy deprivation. And this is why we usually see that chronic dieters often will lose weight during their first few diets. So before they essentially become a chronic dieter, they're able to respond to the deficit because it's a new stimulus, essentially. But over time, you'll hear them say this, and this is something that I encounter quite often. They'll come to me and report the fact that they've realized that it becomes more and more difficult with every subsequent diet they jump into to be able to actually effectively lose body fat. And if you're someone who has engaged in frequent dieting practices, you probably have noticed that after consecutive cycles of weight loss, you need to eat very low calories and do tons of exercise to continue losing weight or even just to maintain the weight you've lost, which for the vast majority of individuals is just unsustainable. And this happens because you've essentially created a new state of energy balance at a lower calorie threshold where your maintenance calorie intake has decreased. And now you feel shitty and your biofeedback is poor as a result of the fact that your system is essentially downregulated due to your underfueling and being in a prolonged state of low energy availability, which is leading to energy deficiency. Now, the issue is that most people are focused on instant gratification. This is what our society is pretty much based around. It's, we are the generation of Uber Eats or Amazon or next day delivery. And a lot of people want to Amazon Prime their body, which just isn't the case or isn't a realistic expectation to say the least. So really, when it comes down to this mindset of instant gratification, many only think about what they want in the here and now. And oftentimes they want to lose weight as quickly as possible and will go to extremes to achieve this goal. And this is especially applicable to those who are very body image and physique focused. So they don't look into the effects chronic dieting can have on their physiology, their health, their performance, and their body composition, and don't realize that they'd be better served by periodizing their attempts at fat loss, meaning going in between cycles of that are planned in phasic periods of eating at maintenance, at eating in a slight surplus, and then going into a deficit when your body is primed and in a very good place to do so. And when you've chronically underfueled yourself, you put yourself into low energy availability, which is a state in which the body does not have enough energy to support all physiological functions needed to maintain optimal health. And being in a state of low energy availability, whether it's done intentionally or not, can have detrimental consequences on health and performance because it induces a variety of maladaptations. And these include things such as endocrine alterations, suppression of the reproductive axis, thyroid hormone suppression, and altered metabolic responses. And from the health perspective, chronic underfueling can lead someone to experience impairments in things like their metabolic function, their growth and development, their endocrine function, the function of their immune system, so their ability to stay healthy and have a well-functioning immune system, their gastrointestinal system, their menstrual cycle function. So this is specifically for females, but even on the reproductive axis for males, we see decreases in testosterone and things of that sort. Then also we see decrements in terms of bone health and bone mineral density. We see impacts to psychology. We see, decrements and impairments to hematological function and to cardiovascular health. And then there's also a wide list of performance, potential performance effects that someone who's chronically underfueling can experience, which includes decreased muscular strength, decreased training performance, decreased endurance performance, loss of muscle mass, or even like an inability to maintain your muscle mass, a decreased responsiveness to training, increased injury risk, decreased glycogen stores, which can actually limit the amount of high-intensity exercise that you can do, as well as your high-intensity exercise performance. It can lead to decreased cognition, coordination, concentration, and impairments even in your judgment, and a potential for irritability and unfavorable mood changes. And research which has specifically looked at the physiological effects of energy deficiency has found that chronic underfueling can lead to decreases in lean body mass and losses in muscle tissue, decreases in muscle protein synthesis rates, leading to less anabolism, yet more catabolism. So you're in less of a state of muscle regrowth or muscle building and more in a state of muscle breakdown. It can lead to hormonal suppression. So we see reductions in things like FSH, which is follicle stimulating hormone, and LH, which is luteinizing hormone. We see suppression in testosterone and estradiol levels, decreases in other hormones such as leptin, IGF-1, and T3, which is a thyroid hormone, and increases in fasting PYY and ghrelin, which increase hunger levels, and then increases in things like cortisol and growth hormone resistance. And so you could be training hard, and really putting an effort 5 to 6 days per week in the gym, but seeing a really low return on investment due to not fueling yourself properly. And this is something more people need to be aware of, because we can't just highlight the benefits of something, such as, if you want to go into a fat loss to reach a goal, you can't just focus on the actual results. You also have to focus on the process and what that's going to require, as well as what that is going to result in. So I really want to cover another topic, which is the difference between appropriate and adequate fueling and underfueling, because like I mentioned prior, chronic underfueling isn't always an intentional thing. Sometimes it's due to a lack of awareness, due to a lack of nutritional IQ or nutritional knowledge, just not being informed, whether it's that you do this on your own, or you have a coach that is just kind of a macro cookie cutter coach that just sends you some, three numbers and sends you on your way. It could be due to a variety of reasons. It could even be due to just having a really hectic lifestyle, such as if you have children, or you have a business that you run, or you have multiple jobs where you're just so busy that you're not even, food is not even top of mind. So you go really long periods in the day without eating. And so you're in a state of within day energy deficiency, essentially. So there's a big difference between dieting for fat loss in an intelligent and strategic manner, where you aim for a slower rate of loss and ensure you're adequately fueled, especially around training, and taking the approach most take to fat loss, which is to cut as many calories out as possible and crank up exercise to try to drop weight as quickly as they can. And unfortunately, many will take the more aggressive approach as they want to see results as quickly as possible, which results in them underfueling themselves and being in a state of low energy availability. And ideally, we'd want to ensure we're using an approach to nutrition for improving body composition that allows us to stay well-fueled, especially around the training window, which is going to be most important, especially for performance and body composition progress. And so if someone is properly fueling themselves, they will have enough calories to fuel training and have enough calories for their body to perform all its other functions related to metabolism, growth and repair, recovery, which is going to allow them to benefit from the training they're doing in terms of adapting to it and responding to it in terms of gaining both muscle and strength. And it also allows them to maintain proper physiological function so that they're able to better maintain their metabolic rate and total daily energy expenditure. However, when someone tries to aggressively diet, they put themselves into a state of low energy availability from this chronic underfueling. And it also gets compounded by the fact that oftentimes they're going to engage in excessive amounts of exercise at the same time. And this means they will no longer have enough calories to fuel their physiological functions. So now they're in a state where their body starts to downregulate these internal processes, where it decreases thyroid production, decreases its metabolic rate, downregulates sex hormone production, which, if we look specifically at females, because often this is a situation that I find more prevalent or more common with a lot of the females that come to me having, just due to the fact that society puts, way too much pressure on women to stay small and tiny and to diet. And these are things that we really need to do away with and really need to shift the paradigm on. However, if we look specifically at some of these effects on women, we see that it can disrupt the female's menstrual cycle and cause either elongated periods, meaning they'll go longer than the normal 21 to 35 day cycle length, or what often happens is they can experience amenorrhea, which is where they completely lose their cycle for 3 months or longer. And then without their cycle, they're no longer adequately producing both progesterone and estradiol. And specifically with that decrease in estradiol, we see a decrease in bone mineral density similar to what many females experience when they transition into menopause, as this is another time in their lives where the cessation or the loss of a menstrual cycle caused a decrease in their sex hormone production. And specifically, this decrease in estrogen has negative effects on their bone health, on their insulin sensitivity, and on their metabolic health. And it can also impact body composition and even fat disposition. And so, if low energy availability goes on for an extended period of time and becomes chronic, it then leads to a deficiency in energy, or the condition referred to as relative energy deficiency syndrome, which can have negative effects on both a person's performance, body composition, and their health. So, this is something we really need to look out for and be aware of. So, when we look at the various aspects of our physiology, our body composition, even our sex hormone production, our health that are impacted, the first thing I want to talk about is how underfueling impacts metabolism, because one of the most common side effects of underfueling is a decrease in metabolic rate and total daily energy expenditure. So the total or the sum total of the amount of calories that you burn per day. And in the literature, we see a more pronounced degree of metabolic suppression and decrease in resting metabolic rate in individuals who have chronically underfueled themselves and have entered a state of energy deficiency. And when we compare groups of females and divide them into women who are menstruating, so naturally menstruating, they're in a good state of energy availability, and then those who have amenorrhea due to aggressive dieting, those with amenorrhea have lower metabolic rates even when they account for the differences in body composition and specifically for muscle. So, for example, in a 2016 study, researchers took exercising women who were naturally menstruating and also exercising, and they compared them against other women who were also exercising but who were amenorrheic due to underfueling, meaning they had lost their cycle as a result of underfueling themselves. And they found even when normalizing each group for their body composition and level of lean mass, the metabolic rate of the women who were experiencing amenorrhea or that loss in the menstrual cycle was still 9% lower or below what it should have been according to their DEXA measurements and 12% lower than exercising women who still had their menstrual cycle. So they saw this massive discrepancy in metabolic rate between those who were adequately fueling themselves and those who were underfueling themselves. And the researchers within this study explain these differences in metabolic rate due to being essentially due to the energy cost of human reproduction and notably that of the normal menstrual cycle function. And the reduction in resting metabolic rate in women without menstrual cycles confirms that the maintenance of a normal menstrual function is an energy demanding and energy costly process. So just going through your monthly cycle, costs energy, guys. And so because of this energy cost, it has been hypothesized that the loss of menstrual cycle function in women can act to conserve energy and decrease a woman's calorie expenditure. And these findings suggest that resting metabolic rate suppression in this population is not the result of a reduced size of their actual body mass, yet it's actually due to metabolic and endocrine adaptations at the tissue level that are indicative of energy conservation. Research has also found that women who frequently restrict their calorie intake while exercising and go through chronic dieting cycles often are less responsive to dieting, especially when utilizing aggressive deficits. So in a 2017 study, researchers investigated this by taking normal weight women and splitting them up into one of three groups. So they essentially had one group who was a severe deficit group. So they were put in an aggressive deficit, and this was close to a 1100 calorie deficit. Then they had one group who was a moderate deficit group that was in little over a 600 calorie deficit. And the last group was an energy balance group who were eating at maintenance throughout the entirety of this trial. And they had each of these three groups train 5 times per week for 3 months. So their exercise was equated, their training was equated. The only thing that differed was their calorie intake, essentially. And the results found that both groups who were put into a deficit lost weight, but the severe deficit group only lost 1 kilogram more at the end of the 12 weeks than the moderate deficit group, when they were projected to lose around 5 kilograms more than the moderate group. So just so you guys know, 5 kilograms is around 11 pounds. But they were under that by 11 pounds, essentially. So they didn't meet the expected weight loss attempts, and they were essentially non-responsive to that dieting intervention due to the fact that they had been chronically underfueled previously. And so they also saw, decreases in things like T3, leptin, and IGF-1 in the severe deficit group, which would account for part of the reason why they experienced less than expected weight loss outcomes. Lastly, in a 2019 review, researchers looked at the body of evidence and the body of literature on the effects of chronic underfueling and being in a prolonged state of low energy availability and its impact on metabolic function. And they found that initially going into a state of low energy availability can lead to weight loss due to the massive deficit it causes. However, long-term low energy availability causes metabolic and physiological adaptations in order to reduce total daily energy expenditure, to prevent further weight loss and regain homeostasis, whereby the body obtains a new steady state of energy balance. And therefore, a person may be weight stable and not excessively low in body mass or body fat levels, yet due to having, gone through so many chronic dieting cycles, they could have what's called impaired physiological function due to this low energy availability, which can hinder their responsiveness to diet and to the deficit that they're trying to create. And this is what we see with many individuals who have been dieting for years, but cannot seem to get any leaner, because the amount of calories they would need to drop to continue losing body fat isn't a level of intake that they can consistently hit or can even sustain for, consistent periods of time needed to be able to at least elicit that fat loss. So another area that's highly impacted by underfueling and low energy availability is our thyroid hormone production. And our thyroid hormone is the master controller of our metabolic rate and governs our ability to burn calories. So if your thyroid production is lower and downregulated, your ability to burn calories and lose fat is going to be hindered, making fat loss more difficult for you. So our thyroid production is highly responsive to energy availability, kind of like our car is with gas and with oil. So if we don't put enough fuel into our bodies, our metabolisms respond and adapt by slowing everything down, including our thyroid production and conversion, just like our car would stop running as well without having an adequate amount of gas and oil in it. So multiple lines of literature show that chronic, dieting and underfueling leads to impairments in thyroid production, which lowers the total amount of calories that we burn per day. So for example, in research which compares females with diet-induced amenorrhea compared to regularly menstruating females and then healthy controls, they find that those with amenorrhea have significantly lower T4 and T3 levels. We also see the same thing when comparing female athletes who have developed amenorrhea as a result of underfueling, and then we compare them with females who are naturally cycling. There's also research done by Dr. Anne Laux, which has experimentally induced a state of low energy availability in females, and then compared them to females that were at normal energy availability, with both groups of females exercising, and have found that the low energy availability group was, essentially being in low energy availability led them to a decrease in T3 and free T3, and then an increase in reverse T3. So essentially, if you look at their lab work, it looks like they have euthyroid 6 syndrome. And so this is essentially a downregulated state, an adaptation as a result of cutting calories far too low. And in a 2002 study, researchers looked at female athletes who were training hard yet underfueling, and found that just within 5 weeks, their free T3 levels had lowered by over 28%. Then in another study on male athletes, they found that when they combined hard training without proper fueling, their T3 levels went down. So when it comes to thyroid hormone health, we see that chronic underfueling can lead to significant changes in thyroid production, especially in T3, which is our metabolically active thyroid hormone that helps to maintain our metabolic rate and our energy expenditure levels. So this is a significant adaptation that we can have just due to the fact that someone is engaging in chronic and cyclic dieting cycles, where they're not giving themselves a good amount of time where they're actually feeding themselves up and giving themselves adequate energy and really fueling everything within their system to be able to upregulate the processes that they've downregulated previously with the aggressive dieting cycles that they've been through. Now, another area that chronic underfueling can have an impact on, and a significant one at that, is on our body composition and our ability to both build and maintain muscle mass. So for example, in a 2014 study from the American Journal of Physiology, Endocrinology, and Metabolism, Researchers looked at the differences in muscle protein synthesis rates when participants were in energy balance and they were in adequate energy availability, and then put them into a state of low energy availability for 5 days. And after just 5 days of being in low energy availability, their muscle protein synthesis rates had reduced by 27% below their baseline values. And the thing is, in order for us to gain muscle, we need to be in a state of positive protein balance, where levels of muscle protein synthesis are consistently higher than our levels of muscle protein breakdown. However, when we're in a state of negative protein balance, like these participants were in this study, from being in low energy availability, it increases our likelihood of muscle growth being blunted and can also lead to muscle loss when this low energy availability state is maintained chronically. And something I see far too commonly in the nutrition space today is people will go right into a dieting phase and they're cutting far too many calories right out the gate when they decide that they want to lose some weight. And not only is this unfavorable from an adherence and a sustainability perspective, but it also leaves dieters far more likely to be in a state of low energy availability due to the underfueling that they're putting themselves through, which can lead to muscle loss, which is something we want to avoid at all costs, as the goal of a fat loss phase should be to maximize muscle retention while losing as much body fat as possible, because that's really what's going to yield a better body composition and a better look and a physique, which is really the goal for all of us. We want to look visually better and feel more confident in our bodies. And there was a study that was just released earlier this year that examined the effects of underfueling and being put in low energy availability and how that impacts body composition, muscle mass, protein synthesis rates, and different components of our metabolism. And this study essentially demonstrates why we want to avoid aggressive dieting and underfueling ourselves. And in this study, what they did was they took well-trained females and put them on a run-in diet where they were at a sufficient energy availability based on their body composition and their level of fat-free mass. And they then split these females into two groups where one stayed at that adequate energy availability, and the other group had their intake cut by approximately 50% to put them into a state of low energy availability. And both groups, throughout the course of the trial, ate 1 gram per pound of protein and followed the same supervised resistance training routine. So, from a programming perspective, they had both groups eating a protein intake and following a progressive resistance training program to maximize muscle growth, or at least to maximize muscle maintenance. They also provided both groups with all their meals for the entire duration of the study. So both their calorie intake and their training were extremely well controlled, which provides us with better data and more information about the true effects of underfueling. So what they did was they took body composition measurements via DEXA, and it was found that in just 10 days, the group that was in low energy availability saw significant reductions in lean body mass compared to the group that was eating at optimal energy availability, who stayed weight stable, but actually saw an increase in their lean mass and a significant decrease in fat mass. So the low energy availability group lost weight and fat, but they also lost muscle mass in the process, while the optimal energy availability group recomps following the same training program and protein intake. And so we see a large discrepancy between eating, say, at maintenance and then eating in a massive deficit, essentially. They also found that those in the low energy availability group saw a reduction in myofibrillar protein synthesis, which essentially is just like the protein synthesis that's specifically involved in the muscle building process. So in order to build muscle mass, we want myofibrillar protein synthesis. Then when they looked at the markers of metabolism, they saw a significant reduction in resting metabolic rate in the low energy availability group. They also found that that group that was underfueled and in low energy availability saw significant decreases in anabolic signaling, increases in catabolic signaling, where the cortisol to insulin ratio was skewed more in a catabolic direction of muscle protein breakdown and degradation, and then a significant reduction in T3 production. So even in a short period of being in low energy availability from slashing calories, we can see a lot of negative effects, which is why it's so important to avoid underfueling and going into a state of low energy availability, especially if your goal is to improve your body composition by losing body fat and gaining or even maintaining your muscle. And this is why, if you're going to diet, you should be taking a more strategic and conservative approach. Another thing that chronic underfueling can do is it can drastically affect our training performance, both in terms of our muscular strength and muscular endurance. So, in a 2018 study, researchers assessed muscular strength in athletes who were either experiencing amenorrhea from underfueling or those who were cycling regularly. What they found was those with amenorrhea had lower knee muscular strength and endurance than those with a regular cycle. And they also found lower leg fat-free mass, so lower lean mass essentially, lower estradiol levels, and lower T3 in the females without a cycle, yet they had increased cortisol levels. So all around, they were in a worse physiological state due to being chronically underfueled. Then in a 2018 study, researchers found that those with low energy availability were almost 1.5 times at 1.5 times greater likelihood or odds of experiencing decreased endurance performance than those with adequate energy availability. So if you're someone who's underfueling yourself but slashing your calories during a dieting phase to do so, you're limiting your ability to essentially gain muscle and even maintain muscle, as training is the most robust stimulus we have to improve our body composition. And in order to maximize the gains we get from our resistance training, we need to ensure our approach to nutrition and training are matched and periodized with one another, so they're complementary. Now, the last effect of underfueling that we're going to cover on today's podcast is how underfueling impacts sex hormone production and endocrine and reproductive function. So in a 2018 review from the International Journal of Sports Nutrition and Exercise Metabolism, researchers looked at the endocrine and hormonal changes caused by chronic underfueling. When it came to sex hormones and the HPG axis, they found that low energy availability led to testosterone being reduced in both males and females, estradiol being reduced in both females and males, and progesterone being reduced in females. Then in terms of metabolism and appetite, they found that resting metabolic rate went down in both females and males, and thyroid hormones go down in both males and females, and these include your T3, your free T3, your T4, and your free T4. Whereas what's interesting is that the TSH levels will usually stay within range. So if you're not getting a full thyroid panel when you run blood work, you could be overlooking this downregulation in thyroid production. Then they found that leptin was reduced in both sexes, and IGF-1 goes down in both males and females. And also, what they also saw in conjunction with that is that IGF-1 binding protein goes up. So essentially what we see is more growth hormone resistance. So growth hormone isn't working as well in the tissues. Then in a 2015 study, they looked at three different energy deficits and how each impacted menstrual cycle function in females. In order to test this, they randomized participants to either an exercising control or one of three exercising and energy deficit groups. So these energy deficit groups were divided into a mild deficit group, a moderate deficit group, and a severe deficit group. And they found that the average percent energy deficit was the main predictor of the frequency of menstrual cycle disturbances. So essentially, the larger the deficit sustained, the higher the likelihood of menstrual cycle disturbances, with the most severe energy deficit group averaging an 810 calorie deficit for 12 weeks. And they had the highest likelihood and highest rate of significant menstrual cycle disturbances. And this was the first study to demonstrate a dose-response relationship between the size of an energy deficit and the frequency of exercise-related menstrual disturbances, which shows how the more aggressive you diet and the lower in energy availability you go, the more likely you are to suffer from hormonal issues associated with underfueling and energy deficiency. And overall, many have been in a situation where they never get as lean as they want to. So they always feel like they need to eat less and do more to get where they want to be. However, sometimes these individuals have put so much stress onto their bodies that they actually need to pull back and eat more and do less for a while to improve their health and to be able to respond to a diet better in the future situation. And I know that this can be a scary situation, as it often requires you doing the opposite of what you think you should be doing, which is to do things differently, essentially, and do less of the things you believe you need to be doing, which is why having a coach to walk you through a process is highly beneficial. And we have to realize, and this is something I've walked many, many clients through, especially female clients, eating more can be pretty much like a mindfuck, and it can be a huge challenge for someone with a history of chronic dieting, especially women who have spent most of their lives believing that they need to become smaller versions of themselves. And the fact of the matter is, most are super focused and super fixated on their weight. But what you have to realize is that the body can only take so much stress and handle so much. And many are highly stressed just due to their day-to-day lives. And then when they try to constantly diet, it results in them being even more resistant to weight loss after dozens of diets pursued over the years. And if you already have high amounts of stress, it makes all components of dieting harder for you, both physically and mentally. And if you're always eating in a deficit and never reverse the adaptations to dieting, how can we pursue greater weight loss without taking calories so low that you can't sustain it? So for those of you who have the goal of dieting at some point in the new year, I encourage you to be honest and objective with yourself and to look back at your dieting history and to really think about whether going to another diet at the start of this new year is going to be something that yields better outcomes than your last diet did, because the worst situation is to finish one diet and not get the result you wanted and then jump into one shortly after and realize that it's even more difficult to see progress, whereas you may benefit more from going into a reverse or recovery diet phase, getting back to maintenance calories and focusing on improving your body composition by building lean mass and restoring your metabolic health so that you can put yourself in a more optimal state in the future, where your body is ready to handle the stress of dieting and will actually respond the way that you want it to as a result. So this is just a little wrap up of this podcast and really why I wanted to cover this topic, because this is something that's going to be extremely prominent. We have about 2 weeks until the new year. And I know so many people that this is going to be their New Year's resolution, is to go into a dieting phase and to lose body fat. But for many, it just isn't the right or appropriate time to do so. And sometimes we have to take a step to the side to be able to launch ourselves forward, or essentially take one step back to take three steps forward. And many don't want to do that. And oftentimes I notice within the coaching industry, some coaches will just tell you what you want to hear, and they're not super objective or honest or realistic with clients' expectations. And I think that that's a disservice within our industry. And so I just try to be honest about both the positives and the negatives of going into a dieting phase. And anytime I have a new client consultation, I'm very objective with them. And if I see that something is going to be a bottleneck or an anchor in their ability to get to their results or to the goals that they have, I want to eliminate, or I want to mitigate, and I want to manage that anchor, that bottleneck within their physiology, their lifestyle, their mindset first, so that it doesn't become something that's dragging you along the process. Think about an anchor, like it's something that's holding you back and essentially making that commute forward, that path forward, a lot more difficult because it's pulling you back throughout the process. So guys, as always, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Be sure to follow the show both on iTunes and Spotify. Please leave a review, preferably 5 stars, and then share the episode on your story so we can continue to reach more listeners and have a positive ripple effect on the industry, as our goal since day one has been to bridge the gap between research and information and practical application. And really, our goal is to be here each and every week. And so this week in particular, Jeff had something that came up. My schedule is extremely hectic, but still, I wanted to dedicate some time to being able to release a podcast and provide you guys with value. So as always, guys, please feel free to reach out to me. You guys can find me on Instagram at @BrandonDeCruz_. Also, I do have some coaching spots and roster spots open on my roster. So feel free, if you guys have an interest, please do reach out. Best way to reach me is on my email, which is bdecruzfitness@gmail.com. And as always, guys, have yourself a great week.